Welcome back to Friday Nights at Blockbuster. I'm Kate Vallee.
And I'm Kieran Vallee.
This is the podcast that explores our favorite movies of the 2000s or any movie that we feel like talking about this week.
Yeah, we have talked about maybe doing a movie or two that I don't actually know if you've seen it, but I have very strong feelings of not liking this movie. So we've talked about that, so we may do that in the next few weeks. But for now, we're still picking movies that we like.
That we like. That
we enjoy.
Or that one of us hasn't seen, which is a movie this week that this haven't seen. But before we get into the movie, what movie news is going on? Are we going to talk about Drake and whoever the other guy was again?
The other guy, Kendrick Lamar.
Kendrick Lamar.
The winner. This is not good for history books if you can't even remember who the winner of the feud was. No, that has definitely quieted down this week. Maybe they're both in the studio recording upcoming diss tracks. I don't know. But that has quieted down. The news that I did want to talk about or just sort of gauge your interest on was that there is this story that has been released this week that they are making two new Lord of the Rings movies.
Okay.
Tentatively entitled, Lord of the Rings, The Hunt for Gollum. And it does seem like it's a returning sort of cast of characters in one sense, like Peter Jackson, Philippa Boyens, and Fran Walsh, who were the three writers of the series, of the original trilogy. They are all coming back to, I believe, write and produce the movies. And Andy Serkis will come back as the director.
Okay.
And so, just before I get your thoughts on that revelation, it did remind me of this, like, idea that we have now come to an age where the studios are mining our own childhoods
for ideas
nostalgia.
Again?
Like, we've obviously grown up in a time where there's been a lot of mining of, like, 80s and early 90s pop culture and things like that. And they're just redoing it like this, you know, this week, last week, The Fall Guy was released, which is like harkening very much back to a 70s and 80s TV show and vibe and things like that. And so the other big one, obviously, from our childhoods was Harry Potter. And I don't know if we've ever actually talked about the fact that HBO are doing a Harry Potter TV show.
Has that actually been confirmed?
Oh, it's coming.
It's coming?
Oh, okay. It's definitely coming. They're not going to, they wouldn't do this. It means way too much to their stock price to just tease this and then not do it. So they are definitely, hell or high water, we are getting a Harry Potter TV series.
Something's coming.
Yeah. Like,
well, I've just heard it for so many years that they were going to do a reboot, that they were going to do more movies and stuff. And so I was holding my breath until I saw the official release date or like an official thing come out. So
I think it's still a year or two down the road. I don't think we're going to get it till 2026. But like, to be fair, Lord of the Rings movies are probably 3-4 years away at this point.
Probably.
But it just struck me that, like, you know, we're getting these two things probably relatively close to each other. Where, you know, when the movies were being released, that was also the big thing. Like, they would both kind of come out in the same years at the same times, and they'd be competing against each other a little bit. And it's sort of like, oh, like, we're right back here again, 20 years later,
well,
the same things.
I've been thinking about that the past couple of years, just seeing shows getting reboots or movies kind of getting redone, that, like, we've just hit the point where we're just, like, recycling.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just like, oh, okay.
There's no new ideas.
It's been a couple years since this came out. Sure, let's do that.
Yeah.
Because even last year on Disney, like, we had a few Percy Jackson movies. Well, now we have the TV show. Like, they're just kind of flipping it. If it was a movie first, now you get the show. If it's a show, I bet you're getting a movie in the not-too-distant future.
I don't know. The Lord of the Rings thing, when my friend sent me that, I was immediately like, oh no. Like, just no excitement for this whatsoever. And I can't honestly tell you why. Like, I didn't like the Hobbit movies, so that's probably playing into it. But I think it is just the idea that, like, Peter Jackson as a young man pitched this idea to the studios to make these movies at the same time. And, you know, we'll take this cast and crew down to New Zealand and we'll do all three at the same time and all this sort of stuff. And it really was this, like, extremely creative, ambitious move. And 20 years later, it just doesn't feel like that anymore. So I'm like tired and worried and not excited that Peter Jackson appears to still be in the same place. Like, I really wish that he had taken all the fame and prestige and awards and money and all that sort of stuff that he got from those movies and was like, I'm going to do this weird thing over here.
Just now. Like something totally different.
Totally different. But it just seems like he kind of wants to keep playing in this sandbox. And I'm not thrilled.
So what, two movies? So
two movies.
Idea maybe is that it's like a part one and part two?
I don't honestly know. The whole thing about like the hunt for Gollum, like that's what it was billed as in this story. Whether or not that title remains,
yeah,
who knows? It's obviously going to be possibly centered on Gollum. Spoiler alert, Gollum dies in Lord of the Rings. So obviously it's going to be a prequel, but like...
Where in the prequel?
Like, it's not going to... I don't think it's going to be that far ahead, far enough ahead, where you get enough distance between the two stories. And like, that was one of my issues with The Hobbit, where because The Hobbit happens directly before Lord of the Rings, they were trying way too hard to tie the two things together. Whereas in the books, there's not really that much overlap because he wrote The Hobbit and then like 20 years later wrote Lord of the Rings. He had never intended for one to sort of seamlessly lead into the other. But the movies tried to do that. And so I don't know. I don't know if that's what they're going to do with the Gollum thing. Like, he has a pretty interesting backstory. But again, we kind of already got that in the movie. I don't know.
And wasn't there a TV show last year?
Yeah, they're definitely doing more of that. But the TV show was not very good. I did not really enjoy the TV show overall. And again, like,
yeah. But I think it was set, like, way before. So at least, like, you were never expecting to really have same characters appear or whatever. Like,
no, they're trying to do their own thing. In some ways, it's kind of nice. They're trying to do their own thing. But yeah, just not thrilled by either of these projects. The Harry Potter thing, like, I don't know. I don't think we need to give any more money to J.K. Rowling. But beyond that, like, I've seen the movies, I've read the books. I don't really need a TV show to go page by page.
And that was always my thinking. If they were going to do something else in the Harry Potter world, do something a little bit different.
Yeah.
Follow Harry's dad and his friends at school. Follow even the kids now, like, have the Cursed Child book and the play and stuff. So, like, just do something different. Go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Be in that world, but over here or something.
I don't know. Two things that do make me...
excited?
A little excited, though, on the flip side of this conversation. Did you see the teaser for the season 3 of The Bear?
No. It came out?
It's out. So The Bear is coming back on June 27th.
Oh, soon. Okay.
These guys, I love them. I don't know how they do it, but like, this is the third year in a row now where they've gone and filmed an entire TV season and edited it, and it's coming out within like 4 months. Like, they filmed this in February.
Oh, wow.
And it's coming out in June. And it's like, this is sick, guys. Like, thank you so much.
Just keep doing this.
I don't know how much more they've got in them. I have the feeling that there's going to be a 3 and a 4 and that they may cap it at 4 because this cast is getting ridiculously famous.
Well, and we've talked about if it's a good show, do a few seasons and finish.
Finish it strong.
Don't drag it out for 10 seasons because... you then lose kind of that special quality that it has. So
I honestly just don't know if they'll be able to afford
it after that.
Jeremy Allen White and, you know, Ayo Edebiri and these, like, because they are getting really famous off this show. So I do wonder if maybe 3 and maybe season 4 and then that'll be that. So yeah, that comes back June 27th. So mark it on the calendar. I am pumped. And then one that's, like, intriguing. I don't know how this is all going to go. You didn't watch Shogun, did you?
No.
No, okay. So I watched it, and I think our mom watched it, and we both loved it. And it ended there a few weeks ago. And it ended kind of interestingly because it didn't really go out the way that I thought it would. But then as soon as I started to think about how it ended, I was like, oh, actually, that is a perfect ending for this show and for what the show was doing. And intriguingly, they have, there's kind of cryptic clues that it may be coming back for a second season.
Okay.
Which is then sort of like, but wait, you've already told the story that you were meaning to, like, they, it's based on a book.
Oh, and they've, like, finished at the end of the book?
They finished the book.
Oh, okay.
That's not to say that there is not way more that can be explored, but they will now be off book.
Oh.
So it intrigues me to see.
Sometimes that goes really well and sometimes it does not.
That's my thinking. That's my thinking. I am there for it.
Okay.
I loved Shogun so much that, like, if it comes back for a second season, I will definitely be checking it out. There are some character details for people who have not watched the show where, like, certain characters will not be in season two.
Okay.
Irregardless of what that season two is. And that gives me pause because those were, like, my favorite characters. But the show as a whole, the team behind it, all that sort of stuff, it's intrigued me that they haven't come out and said, no, it is done, it is finished. They've sort of left a door open to sort of be like, well, we might be doing more.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Well, to get into the movie for this week, we are going back to January 29th, 2010, when we could have rented Whip It, which is, as we teased last week, a part of the my top five directorial debuts by Drew Barrymore. So before we start, a little note about the movie. It was, the main character originally was Ellen Page, has now transitioned to Elliot Page. We will try our best at using the correct pronouns. When we refer to she or her, we're obviously talking about the character
Bliss. Yeah.
And if we are trying to refer more about Elliot Page, we will try our best to use he.
Yeah.
We will try our best.
Yeah. So. I think, like, that's the thing. Like, Elliot Page was playing a female character in this movie. So the female character absolutely goes by she, her in the movie. But Elliot Page goes by he, him now.
Yeah. So yeah. From the top, we will try our best. But that's what's happening. So start off, Kieran. What'd you think? This was a first time watch for you, which I was really surprised about.
Yeah, I talked about it a little bit last week that, like, I do remember when this movie came out, and I do remember sort of like the 2009, 2010 sort of award season and the movies that were around. And there were, like, this was always kind of like a dark horse pick, like an outside shot at maybe something. I think probably writing, like, something maybe a little bit lower down the line a little bit.
Is writing a lower bar, a lower award?
It is in terms of the prestige, I think, of the awards. I don't think of it like that. But, and so I do remember having the sort of conversation with myself of, like, oh, I should watch that. And I'll get to it if it gets the award nominations that I think it's probably going to get. And then it didn't get them. And so then it sort of became easy to sort of be like, okay, well, I don't actually need to watch this. There's like five other movies that I do need to watch, so I'll watch those instead. And then it sort of just becomes 15 years later and you still haven't seen Whip It, even though you've heard really, really good things. And so, yeah, first time watch, happy to finally watch it. I do really like Elliot Page. I find that he, especially at this time, like, showed up in, like, really interesting movies.
Kind of, yeah, made interesting choices.
Yeah, yeah, and like one movie that I've kind of been holding on to and haven't really suggested that we do yet, but I think maybe we should, and maybe we should now that we've done Whip It, is Juno, which came out, I think, a year or two before this and was sort of the splashy, like,
oh yeah,
here's a brand new sort of star on the scene. And so, like, all those things were in there to be sort of like, oh, I should definitely watch this movie, and just I didn't. But going back, I was like, oh, this is really nice. Like, it's a really nice sports movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's got a lot of the tropes of a sports movie. If you've watched one, you've watched all of them. They're all here. It's not really reinventing the wheel in that sense. But what it is doing is, because it's a sport that isn't very well known, that's already sort of put it into a more interesting position. And because it's a largely female cast, again, it is just like, oh, it's not just jock dudes on screen. Like, it is, it's fresh. It's a little bit different. And so even though it's got all these tropes from a storytelling standpoint, it feels a little different. And so I was sitting there being like, this is really nice. I really enjoy it. Like,
you enjoyed the 2 hours that it was on?
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, it was one of those ones where it's not going to like change my life in a way. You know what I mean? But at the same time, sort of be like, that was really good. And I would like happily recommend that to people who have not seen it.
Okay.
And you maybe aren't sports movie fans. It's sort of like, well, it's maybe like a, check this one out.
Yeah, it's like sports light.
Yeah, like maybe this one over here might be a way into, you know, other things. But I like, you've done this to me before, so I'm just going to do this because I don't often see your reviews and your scores on the movies before we actually sit down to talk.
Yeah, usually because I forget.
So. Usually because you forget. You had this as one of your top five ever directorial debuts. You gave this 3 out of 5. I gave it a better score.
I think I bumped it up this time. I think I've bumped it up this watch. It was because I think I saw it when it originally came out.
Yeah.
Because I would have been into watching Elliot Page, Drew Barrymore, and the idea that, like you said, it was a predominantly female cast. Like, my kind of movie.
There's like 2 male characters and really? One of them sucks. And we'll get to that.
I did see that in your review. Yeah. But so like that would be it. The idea that it was a sports movie, but not the typical basketball or football or whatever. Right. Yeah. Like, so like all would have worked for me. But that being said, I probably haven't seen it in 14 years. So
3 stars.
When I was going and giving it the original reviews, when I signed up for Letterboxd, it was me being like, oh, I think I enjoyed this movie. And like, my 3 star is, I might get into the mood to watch it again. Or if I came across it on TV, sure, I would sit and watch it. So now it's probably like a 3.5, maybe a 4. I also didn't have that many directorial debuts. So I needed to start scraping the barrel. A little bit.
Fair enough.
But let's go to Drew Barrymore.
Okay.
Directorial debut. What'd you think? And really her only film she's directed.
That has surprised me that she hasn't gone back to do something more. I think this, I don't know if it made as much money as maybe they were hoping it would, or expecting that it would. I would maybe point to the fact that like 2009, it's about a sport that not many people know about. It doesn't necessarily have a movie star in it, although it does have like Drew Barrymore as a supporting role, Kristen Wiig as a supporting role, Elliot Page coming off of Juno. Like there are
names,
but I don't necessarily know if they are movie stars at that point. You know what I mean? But it did surprise me that she hasn't gone back to do something more, because what I think I found throughout the movie is like, even though it's about roller derby, and that obviously takes up a lot of the movie, is, you know, the competition and the events of the roller derby and a little bit of training and things like that, there are a lot of scenes with Elliot Page and Kristen Wiig, Elliot Page and Drew Barrymore, Elliot Page and Aaliyah Shawkat, her best friend, like, and they're just kind of hanging out and talking and kind of riffing on each other and kind of making fun of each other a little bit, but like as friends do. And then there's obviously the team aspect where like they go out for a party or they go out for a meal. And like all of those scenes, I was like, oh, this is good. Like Drew Barrymore knows how to shoot this and make it interesting, because it is just people talking.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the most cinematic thing in the world. But there was something there. She was able to get good performances out of the people. Her being an actor probably helps. But there was something there with those scenes where I was like, oh, those are good. The flip side is I wasn't as sold with the roller derby stuff as I was with the hanging out stuff. And so in my mind, I was sort of like, well, like that is clearly like the sport.
Yeah.
So maybe she just can't, or at this time couldn't, shoot that. But if she took a movie where it was just people talking, I'd watch it. I'd be intrigued. So, you know, there was the flip side. There's sort of the both sides of the coin, whereas half the movie I was like, this is really good. I'm really enjoying this. And then the other half I was like, ah, it's a little messy.
So what about the derby scenes didn't work for you then?
Well, so I think with the derby scenes, what I eventually ended up likening it to, especially because the way that the sport is played, it's a little bit like race cars and football.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like there's the track and there's the speed and there's the you know, the movement of the laps and all this sort of stuff. But then they're also hitting each other.
Yeah.
And so what I think, and I tend to think this way about like fight scenes, like action fight scenes as well, is that we need to know geography of the scene.
So kind of place them a bit.
So I need to know where everybody is. I need to know where everybody's going. I need to know what their goal, like, what are they trying to do? What are they trying to achieve? And then you need to make it cinematic. You need to make me feel, like, excited by what's happening. It's really hard to do all those things. And that's why with sports movies, you do find that, like, there are really good ones and then there are really bad ones. And the really good ones, I think, give you that feeling of, like, oh, I'm on the field and I know what's happening. I can see everything that's going on. And I can feel sort of the action and the adrenaline and the excitement of like being in there, being involved. But the really bad ones are sort of like, it's just a jumbled mess of things that are going on. And like, I don't know what's happening, but like, I guess it's exciting. I don't know, a lot's seeming going on the screen. And so like some sports are definitely easier than others. Like football is quite easy because it is two teams against, like facing each other. One's moving in one direction, the other's moving the other direction. And that's kind of it. Like there's a play and then the play stops and then they reset and they play and then the play stops. Hockey is really difficult because hockey doesn't stop. Hockey keeps moving all the time.
And you have somebody going straight, somebody going off to the right. Yeah.
Soccer is really hard. Soccer doesn't stop. You know what I mean? So like there are things like that. And I think the roller derby just kind of missed the mark a little bit, where it's sort of like, I think if somebody was a little bit more experienced, they would have made it simpler and therefore made it more understanding, which therefore would have made it more exciting, because I could have been there being like, oh, she's there and she needs to get there. And then this person, and you could see everything. Whereas how it's presented a little bit and whip it, you're sort of like, okay, did they get points? I don't really know what's going on.
So would you almost have enjoyed like a camera more on like Elliot Page's like helmet and kind of like in their point of view?
Possibly.
Or something?
Possibly. I think a lot of it does actually come down to the editing of it. Where I found that the editing was like too chaotic. Obviously, the roller derby match can be chaotic. Like there's a lot of things happening. But to make it more interesting or more palatable to somebody like me who has no idea what is happening, I need to be able to see what is going on. If I can't see what's happening, I can't possibly start to understand it. And so, like, I keep coming back to the fight scenes, but like, you do get that in fight scenes where it's like, if you go off and you watch John Wick shows you everything.
Yeah.
And you understand everything. You understand who's coming with what weapon, where they're coming. You see all the moves. You see everything that's happening. And that makes it more exciting because you can understand everything that's going on. Whereas some fight scenes that are just kind of a jumbled mess of edits, they're not thrilling because they're obviously piecing it all together. And that's how I felt a little bit about the derby matches, where it's sort of like, I don't really know what's happening, but in 3 minutes, they'll tell me if they won or lost, and then we can just move on. But you obviously have this in your top five. Keep coming back to this. You've got this movie in your top five directorial debuts. So, like, what about it for you from a Drew Barrymore standpoint, where you just, like, beyond the fact that you didn't have five directorial debuts to choose from, where you just like, I really like this. I really enjoy it.
I think part of it is, and I don't know if it's maybe the story as well, like the writing, but I kind of just felt like Elliot Page did a good job at playing a kid. Like, so like
I completely agree with this.
I felt like the Bliss character, she seemed like a normal kid to me. Yeah. Like she seemed like a kid who maybe has a bit of a controlling parent and is trying to push her into something she doesn't want to do. but she's going to do it because it's her mom and she wants to make her mom kind of happy. She's got a friend who clearly they're best friends. They've made a pact to try and get out of this little know-nothing town. And then she gets into this, kind of coincidentally, finds out about this roller derby, goes to a match, and is just floored by these women and what they are able to do and the idea that they don't hold back. Like, there's no, it's not prim and proper. Like, yeah, they are going for it and stuff. And the idea that it just sparked something in Bliss of, well, I'm going to try this. Like, I might not be good, but I'm going to give it a shot. And, like, even her friend there on the side being like, you're not going to be good. So, like, why are we going? And just slowly seeing Bliss kind of grow and develop into a person of, well, I can still be this person for my mom and I can still show up for my mom and I'll try my best. But really, this is what I kind of want to do in my life right now. And so, like I said, I don't know if that was a lot of like how Drew Barrymore directed it.
But just the overall story.
But the overall story. And I, for me, a director is kind of the person who has like that big picture. And like clearly that was Drew Barrymore's big picture. Is she wanted to tell this story about a young girl getting into this world and maybe not being great, but turning out to be halfway decent. And like, she does turn into, I think, a pretty good player. I think by the end, she's pretty good. So
yeah, like I've obviously talked about the fact that it's like, it's a sports movie and there's a lot of sports movie tropes in it. It's also a coming of age story, like a finding yourself, a discovering yourself. And so you do get that, like, it sets itself up pretty early, and you do get that idea of, like, she's a small-town girl, and she goes to the city one night on a whim, and is like, oh, like, wow, the world opens up, and, like, here are possibilities beyond her tiny town, and, like, you know,
the oink joint?
Yeah, or whatever. The one tiny restaurant that she works in, and she knows three people in the town, you know what I mean? Like, you obviously get that in a million movies, but I think you get that because it is true. Like, you grow up in these places and you go to the city and you're just like, wait, what are they doing?
Yeah.
This is possible?
What is the sport? Like,
and so then I do agree that like there maybe is a bit of a logical leap or whatever, a character leap where she goes from watching it to being like, I can do this.
Yeah.
Cause it's just sort of like, she has no background in this whatsoever. It's not even like tangentially related to anything she's ever done. But I think that there is that one little line, or that it's pretty good, clever little line where she meets Kristen Wiig's character after the first time she goes to see them. And she sort of offhandedly says, you guys are my new heroes.
Yeah.
And Kristen Wiig's reply is, well, like, be your own hero. And I think that probably is enough to plant a seed to be like, just come try out.
Yeah.
You might be terrible. What if you're not?
Yeah. You might be halfway okay.
Yeah. And it turns out like she is like okay. And she's got some sort of raw skills. And with a bit more practice and a bit more experience, they all see something in her where it's sort of like, yeah, Bliss could do this and could probably be pretty good at it. I do think the thing about Elliot Page's performance as another sort of teenage girl in this movie as compared to Juno, I was curious, like, I was watching this and being like, this might be a better performance than Juno.
Really?
Yeah. And like, Juno's kind of, like we said, like, Juno is an announcement performance of like, look at this person.
Yeah.
Like the way that Juno talks, the way that she sort of carries herself, like, people don't like her and like that movie, I think, because it's maybe a bit too much at times. But at the same time, I don't know if you can sort of be like, well, I'm not intrigued by this character. Whereas I found Bliss to be way more realistic and therefore like almost harder to pull off. And so I was just watching Elliot Page being like, fuck, like,
you've done such a good job.
That's a performance. You know what I mean? Like, if you didn't have Juno already in your back pocket, this movie, I think, would have been like, holy fuck, like, who is this person?
Yeah, I think for me, this one, in some ways, like, it's easier to identify with.
Yeah.
The Juno character,
she's almost too cool.
She's too cool. Yeah. She's, like, I think she's supposed to be, what, 17 or something?
I think they're relatively the same age.
They're about 17, I think. The Juno character I always felt should have been older, or, like, was meant to... She plays an older 17-year-old or something, whereas the Bliss character, like, that's 17 for me. Like,
yeah. I think it just, like, it kind of comes down to... I don't necessarily know who wrote Whip It here, but the Juno character is definitely a character written by an older person who has way more pop cultural references, way more sort of wit and intelligence at like their fingertips that they've then put into the mouth of a 17-year-old character, where like you can enjoy it, you cannot enjoy it. Like I can understand that. It's a little bit like Aaron Sorkin dialogue. Everybody in an Aaron Sorkin movie or TV show, everyone talks like Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
And you're sort of like, okay, I can enjoy this on some levels, but at the same time can identify that like not everybody speaks like that. Not everybody is as intelligent as what is being shown to me. And like there's a little bit of Juno, there's a little bit of like that in Juno where it's sort of like, okay, but really like 17-year-olds don't really talk like this. Whereas I found Bliss and her friends and things like that were sort of like, oh, this is real. Like this is how I spoke to my friends at this time. You know what I mean? Like kind of talk about nothing, but then at the same time, it feels important.
Yeah. So this one, Whip It, was written by Shauna Cross. So she also did Taking Five, If I Stay, Bad Santa 2, and What to Expect When You're Expecting. But she wrote the Whip It book.
Right.
So.
I think she's more or less Bliss, is she not? Give or take.
I think that's the idea.
Right. In terms of supporting characters, who do you want to go to first? Do you want to go to the parents or to the team?
Let's do the parents. Let's do the parents. So we have Marcia
Gay Harden.
Marcia Gay Harden. And then which one's
Daniel Stern is the dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved them. I think they both did such a good job.
I think they're like they're really good movie parents. Like I can believe it.
I think because I've seen Marcia in other kind of roles like this.
She's the bigger name.
She's the bigger name, but I think she tends to kind of play this kind of parent. So like it was easy for me to watch her in this and be like, yeah, I believe you. Like yeah. I've seen you do this before. And similar to like Bliss wanting to kind of get out of this town, the Marcia's character, Brooke, like just wants her daughters to exceed.
Yeah.
Like succeed. And like she believes the way to do that is getting them into these beauty pageants. I can't talk today. Because, like, their name will get out there, they'll meet somebody, and maybe that's the way to get them out of the town.
That was my question about the pageants. Like, what is the end game for the pageants? Because there didn't seem to be that much money on the line. There didn't seem to be, like, scholarships to universities or anything like that. Like, was it quite literally just to be like, I'm the prettiest person in this town? Somebody come marry me?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Maybe I take it back about the good parent thing then. I was just curious about the pageants because they didn't even seem big enough. Like
it seemed like the same 10 girls.
It seemed like the same 10 people. So like the comparison point with the pageant stuff is obviously Little Miss Sunshine. And at least in that movie, you could point to the fact that like there's money on the line. The winner gets money. The winner gets something. And there's like hundreds of little girls going out for it. So it's like, this is a big deal. Whereas like the pageants in this town is like the same 10 people, same answers, the same parents. And you're sort of like, but, like, what do they win? What do they get if they win? And like,
I think
why is she pushing for a win here so badly?
I think it is just to get their name out there so that when they meet a guy, they can say,
resume.
This is my resume. Yeah. I've won these awards. I will be a good wife because I am pretty and I am poised and I can talk to anybody and whatever. So
we'll get to Daniel Stern in a second. But the other thing I wanted to ask as a mother of a daughter.
Okay.
Like, was it not painfully obvious to Marcia Gay Harden that like Bliss did not care about the pageants at all? When she rocks up with blue hair and is late. To sort of be like, oh, maybe we've pushed this envelope far enough. Like, maybe she's not into it anymore.
Maybe I should just focus on the younger daughter who keeps winning.
Who's winning trophies bigger than her. That was the other thing that I was sort of like, it's a funny sight gag, but I was like, what is this actually implying? That, like, the winner of Bliss's age group of the pageant gets, like, a pretty modest size trophy. But then Bliss's younger sister, who won her age group, gets this one that's, like, 3 feet tall. And you're like, did they really spend more money on the younger trophy than the older trophy?
I don't really know, because they want the younger girls to stay in the
maybe
the competition. They want them to come back every
year. I thought it was like a funny sight gag, this little girl carrying around this trophy that's twice the size of her. But I was sort of like, but wait, like, what is happening? But yes, back to the pageant thing. Like, it was painfully obvious within about 10 seconds that, like, Bliss doesn't like this.
No, Bliss is over it.
Yeah.
But she shows up because it's going to make her mom happy.
It is the one thing about Bliss with her character that I was sort of like, oh, this is real. Where she's like, she's super uncertain about herself. She's a little shy. And you can tell that, like, because, what's the mom's? Brooke is the mom. Marcia Gay Harden's character. She's not domineering in that sort of classical sense of, like, you will do what I say.
Yeah.
But she's controlling just enough that I think you would understand if you'd grown up in that household. You'd sort of be like, well, like, I don't really like doing this anymore, but, like, my mom says I've got to do it, so yeah. I'm going to keep doing it. Like,
I'm just gonna
it's, like,
going.
That level, just enough
yeah.
to sort of be like, well, and, like, again, we go back to the small town, like, she just doesn't know what else is out there. What else is there to do?
Yeah.
So there's enough things, but I was sort of like, why are we spending $800 on a custom dress for a person who does not care about these pageants anymore?
Because it's also what she grew up doing, right? Like, you get the you get the one scene where she's looking at a young photo of herself and having won whatever competition it was at the time and stuff. And so I think she's just there being like, this is what's going to help my kids.
Yeah.
If Briar chooses to go into pageants, I will reluctantly show up, but I am not pushing those.
So. I can tell you right now, I think the other week I said no magic, please.
Oh,
no,
did you?
No pageants either. Pageants and magic, I'm out.
You won't come and support her?
I literally support anything else, but pageants and magic, I'll sort of be like, no, it's not for me.
I have something better to do on a Saturday.
This is not for me. I'm sick.
Daniel Stern.
He's like the funny one.
Yeah.
And, like, he's really good at being the funny parent. I did like that he obviously has a slightly different relationship with Bliss. I think maybe they see each other a tiny bit more as equals. There's obviously that scene where she discovers him in the back of the van screaming. And she's sort of like, oh, dear God. And then it turns out he's just watching football. And you're sort of like, again, it's like a funny 10-second little joke.
Yeah.
And
he's, like, the checked out parent. Like,
he's a little checked out. Like yes and no. Like, he's a little checked out in the sense that he's now spent years in a house of women and just wants to watch football.
Yeah.
And either nobody will let him or nobody is interested or whatever. And so he's, like, concocted this whole life where he says he's coming home from work late. Or he's staying, or he's going out early, or whatever it is, and he's really just going to the van to watch football. And so you're sort of like, okay, on one hand, it's not great.
No.
You probably should talk to your family about this. But on the other hand, it's sort of like, he's not really doing anything harmful. Like, just let the guy fucking watch some football. But I thought, to counter your point about being checked out, in the moments where he needed to show up, he shows up.
Yes.
He is there.
I would say he's checked out 90% of the time.
Yes.
Sure. Because I would say the wife, like we said, is
she's running the house.
Yeah. She knows what needs to get done. She's doing the things. He goes, he gets the money and stuff like that. But when the kids need him, he's there.
My other question was, like, what does he do? What is his job?
Because
I was a little unsure about that as well. Like, there is one point where they call him at work. And he's, like, eating lunch at work or something. Like, he's in, like, an office.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't really know what he does. And so then I was kind of curious, like, is she also the breadwinner?
No, I think he definitely has...
I think he has a job.
He has a job. Work. Because she's a mail carrier.
A mail carrier, yeah.
So, I would say that they both are out of the house working.
Right, right.
But, yeah, no, like, he is checked out most of the time. But when Bliss needs him or when the younger daughter needs him, like, he's there.
But, even the scene where, like, he disciplines Bliss for staying out all night. Sort of like, he's around.
Yeah, that's true.
He's not, like, letting things skate by. He just wants to watch football on his own in his van and drink some beer, which, like, on the scale of bad things is not really that high. But I was happy to see that scene where he disciplines Bliss because I was a little worried that the movie was setting up a, like, good parent and bad parent.
Yeah.
And Marcia Gay Harden was, like, always going to be the bad parent because she always wanted to do the pageants that Bliss didn't want to do. And so when that scene happened... And they're both kind of on the same page. I was sort of like, okay, that's cool. Like, that's good. Because, like...
It's equal.
And, like, honestly, this marriage wouldn't have lasted if they weren't on the same page. Like, you know what I mean? If they didn't have each other's backs.
Yeah.
I would kind of question, like, why is she hanging around with this guy? But, he was right in there. And, like, he was not going to take any of the arguments that Bliss was throwing out. He was sort of like, no, you're a 17-year-old. You stayed here all night and you've been lying to us. Like... sort of end of discussion.
Yeah.
And I was sort of like, oh, that's a cool scene for him. And then he obviously gets the scene at the end where he doesn't turn his back or whatever, or I don't know what the phrase is there. He doesn't reverse his decision, but he just recognizes, like, she really doesn't like this and she really loves this thing over here.
And so I'm, like, not willing to have a sad kid.
So, like, I don't understand this thing. I don't know why she likes it, but she does. So here you go. And I'm going to be there. I'm going to support it.
Yeah. What I love that. And then I do love that, like, the mom shows up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she has to.
She's got to be there.
Like.
She's got to see it. Like, I don't think that there was ever any question that I had where she was she's not going to show up. I was like, she's definitely going to show up. I think what I was more interested in was, like, the amount of time that they showed her there.
Oh, okay.
Because I think normally what you would do in that sense, and, like, I'm going back to sort of sports movie brain, is like the parent who doesn't understand why their kid wants to do this thing or anything like that. That's well-worn territory that happens in almost every sports movie.
Yeah.
You then, like, sneakily have the parent in the back of the room watching, and then, like, the big play happens and we cut to the parent and you're like, oh, they've been there the whole time. Like, oh, it's so great. Whereas in this movie, it's sort of like, no, the match hasn't even started, and she's there, and she's, like, front row.
Yeah.
And she's watching it. And you don't know if Bliss sees her or not.
But I don't think she does.
She watches everything.
Yeah.
She watches how good Bliss is. She watches Bliss get hurt. She watches Bliss crush it. And you're sort of like, oh, like, she's taking in the whole experience. And then still at the end, she's like, I don't fully get it. I don't fully like it. But you obviously do.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, those are good... good and bad parenting, but I think mostly good.
Just equal parenting.
Yeah.
Just equal. Okay, on to the team.
Who's your favorite character on the team?
I love Drew Barrymore's character because I think she's just such a mess. And I love that she put her in the role, like, herself in the role of, like, the character.
The mess. Yeah.
Because it would be so easy for her to have cast herself in... like the Kristen Wiig character, where she's kind of the mentor and the team lead and stuff like that. It would have been so, like, an easy role. But for her to be like, no, I'm already going to direct this. I'm fine being the character that
the chaotic one.
that gets in fights and clotheslines people and punches them and stuff like that. Like,
you sort of get the sense that she's almost like, she's supposed to be the one who gets the points, who scores the points for the team. But she just spends her time beating up the other players that are getting kicked out of the game. She's like, oh, okay. Like,
if she stayed in the game, she'd probably do really well.
She'd probably do fine. But, like, she's just way more concerned with beating up the other players. Which, there is a line in roller derby. But, yeah, I liked her. I like Kristen Wiig. There probably wasn't enough of Eve to sort of be like, what is she doing here? Like, what is the point of her character? Like, what is her job on the team? Because she didn't really get any sort of scenes with Bliss in the way that, like, Kristen Wiig becomes the mentor, like you said.
Yeah.
She becomes the sort of, you know, you don't want to say, like, in 10 years you could be me, kid. Because, like, really, like, who is she? But at the same time, you're sort of like, oh, like, you know, she's a well-adjusted adult.
Yeah.
At things like that. She wasn't on the team, but I really loved Juliette Lewis's character. Just sort of the rival bad, I was going to say bad boy, but like bad one, bad girl. Where I just like that she's like, I'm fucking great at this. And this is like the one thing in my life I am great at. So like.
And I only picked it up 5 years ago or but like, whatever. Like
kind of get out of my way.
Yeah. This is my time to be shining.
I was like, oh, that's a good character. And Juliette Lewis is pretty awesome. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I kind of like the whole team. I like their dynamic. That, like, sort of none of them have their lives together, but they all kind of do at the same time.
I think they have enough. The idea that Kristen Wiig's character, like, has a son, and that's why she doesn't go out afterwards stuff, because, no, I want to get home to my kid. Like, I liked that. Because it would have been so easy to have them all party girls whatever. So... what would be your derby name?
I was kind of thinking about this during the movie because it obviously becomes a thing. They all have these sort of pun names.
Yeah.
And then the movie ended and I stopped thinking about it. And 5 seconds ago, I was like, oh, she's going to ask me about this. And so I don't really have one. I was thinking about something like Martin Scorsese Saw or something like that.
Nice.
But I don't really know. Do you have one?
I don't have one myself, but I enjoyed all of them. Like, we have Smashley Simpson.
Yeah.
Maggie Mayhem. Iron Mayhem.
Iron Maven.
Iron Maven, sorry. Yeah. Rosa Sparks.
Yeah. Babe Ruthless.
Babe Ruthless. I think those are really the only ones.
I think those are the big ones. Those are the ones that we kind of hear about.
Yeah. And so, then Eva Destruction.
Yeah, Eva Destruction is a good one. That was a good one.
But yeah, no, I enjoyed those because, like, it gives them a different persona.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When they're at Derby, they become these people and can have fun.
I do like that, like, I think there's parts of the movie where somebody calls, I think maybe it is Daniel Stern, calls Kristen Wiig's character. And is like, I'm looking for a Miss Mayhem. And she's like, yeah, Maggie Mayhem. And she's like, oh, like, do they maybe go by these names outside of the Derby as well? Like, I kind of would if that was my nickname. But yeah, I don't know. It gives them a persona. It gives them a character to sort of play up for the roller derby.
Should we talk about the other character in Derby? Do you want to talk about the guy that you didn't mind or the one that you despised?
Oh, well, now that you said that, there might actually be a couple.
Oh, okay.
So
let's break down the guys. There's not that many guys in the movie.
There's technically four. So there's the coach.
Yep. Razor.
Razor, who is the one I did like. There is also the manager at the restaurant joint that Bliss works at. Birdman. He was okay. Even though he's kind of gone corporate, as they said in the movie. he's okay. Then there are the two that I don't like. One is sort of like, I don't like him as a person. And the other one is I don't like him as a character.
Okay.
So the character one is the boyfriend character.
Yeah.
He just sucks.
Yeah, he's just slimy.
But also, as the movie was going on, I was like, oh, he's so unnecessary. Like, he actually doesn't need to be here. The character doesn't need to exist at all. Because the movie's not really about...
yeah.
That?
Yeah. If she didn't have a love interest, it would have been fine.
If she didn't have a love interest, we could have spent more time with the team, more time with her and the parents, which is like the stuff that I did enjoy.
Yeah.
So it's not even that like I didn't like him as a character. It's more that like I didn't like him and he was taking away time from the things I did like, okay. Which makes I doubly dislike him. So like... it was not a good setup for him as the character. But, like, yes, he turns out to be a bit of a slimy character. A musician. Can't trust them.
No.
But, yeah, the one that I don't like as a person is Jimmy Fallon. Who's just, like, in every derby scene, commentating on it, walking us through all the rules. And I was very quickly like, oh, there's going to be a lot of Jimmy Fallon. And yeah. I'm not really that interested.
I forgot he was in it. And so the first time he appears, I was like, oh, yes, you're here too. And he just gets to be silly.
Like, he's just like the MC of the derby matches. And I was kind of, when he first shows up and he first walks us through the rules and like, oh, if you're the first time at derby, like this is how you score points and walks you through all that sort of stuff. I was like, okay, cool. We're done.
Okay. We've got the rules. We know how to play.
Yeah. Like that's his function. But then he shows up every match to walk us through what's happening in that match. And maybe that's the point where I was coming back to what I was saying about the matches, where it's like, if they were shot and edited a little clearer, we would need less of Jimmy Fallon to explain what is happening. But because it's really hard to understand what's happening, you do need somebody to be like, well, they just scored 3 points.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, great. So they got 3 points. But if I had just been able to watch them do it, I wouldn't have needed him to tell me that they.
So by the end of the movie, did you figure out how they score points?
Yeah. Like, it's actually, it's one of those things where, like, I had no concept of it whatsoever, except the fact that they go around a track and they hit each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole idea of the two people with the stars on their helmet.
Which I didn't realize changed every...
You can put new people in, like a batter in baseball or whatever.
Yeah, I thought it was always going to be the same person. Yeah, I kind of forgot they switched.
They can kind of rotate through. But yes, there's a group of skaters that go as a big group. It goes like a big cluster. And then these two come in afterwards. And they've got to get through that cluster, make it all the way back around the track, and then get through again.
Yeah.
And it's when they go through again that they start to score points based on how many opponents' players they pass. And so I did wonder if there was like maybe a time limit, or if it's only like one or two laps around the track before you start and stop again. Because I was kind of wondering, like, how do they not score the maximum of 5 points every time? There's five other opponents on the track. And like sometimes they were getting two and sometimes they were getting five. So presumably it must stop somewhere and be like, well, you haven't gotten past
the start point again.
This person. So you only get 4 points because... you didn't get past them or whatever. I don't really know how it works, but more or less, that's how you score points in Derby. And I don't know. It's like simple enough that one explanation was kind of all I needed, but also interesting enough that like things can happen along the way.
Yeah. I think you were saying one of the things you enjoyed about the movie was like the team hanging out and those scenes. What I found interesting, and I guess just because it is a small league, I think there's five teams or whatever.
Yeah.
The idea that like all the teams just hang out with each other.
Yeah. Cause there's nobody else.
Cause there's nobody else.
Yeah.
So there's the one scene where they reveal the poster, like the upcoming poster that's going to be shared. And obviously it's Elliot Page's character Bliss is on it. And so Iron Maven comes over and kind of says something snide about it. And then all of a sudden the food fight erupts, and I enjoyed that scene because you can just see all the other teams being like, yeah, we also don't really like Iron Maven. Like, she probably is kind of annoying to everybody.
Yeah.
But also maybe it's because she's probably one of the better players.
So I think she is the best player.
So you tend to get annoyed with the best players, but that they all just have this like fun food fight. And I was like, I would love to film a food fight scene. It's one of the things in my life that I would love to do. So
there's obviously that scene, but then the party scene must happen after Bliss's first match, I think. After the first time she actually competes.
Oh, and we get introduced, like, we know Jimmy Fallon's character is there, but they tell us the story of Hot Tub Jimmy.
Yeah, they go to the party afterwards. And in the hot tub is Eva Destruction and Rose Sparks, who are technically on different teams, but like I don't necessarily know if it was implying that they're in a relationship or anything like that, but like they're sitting close, they're talking sort of intimately to each other, they're hanging out. And I think that gives you that sense of like, there's like 30 women in this league and they've just been divided up into the 6 teams. But like, it's not like they went and made a team and now they're competing against each other. It's sort of like, there's just 30 people and they just were like, okay, you six there. So they're like, they're all friends. They all hang out. They all like each other. And then for, I don't know how long the matches are, but for however long they last, they beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I did wonder. So like, there was a bit made, I believe during the tryout scene where we come to realize that like Bliss is quite fast. She has like a lot of speed. Yeah. And that's kind of the skill that she's working with. But then the coach and the people are sort of like, you're going to have to start throwing hits. You have to start sort of punching your weight out here a little bit. I don't know if she ever actually did throw a hit for the entire movie. And so then I'm sort of like, oh, like, she needs to get her hands dirty a little bit.
I don't think she did.
I don't think Bliss throws a hit. She gets hit.
She gets hit. I think maybe she does a little bit, because sometimes she ends up in that front group. And I would say she probably does, like, a little shoulder.
That's true. But yeah, I would have just liked to have seen Bliss.
Like, actually
throw that weight around. Yeah, just take somebody out. Because some of the plays that they come up with, are you're sort of like, oh, okay. Like,
I was about to talk about the plays. Yeah, I enjoyed the playbook.
Just full on, like, five women punching another five women in the face. I'm like, well, I guess that's legal.
I enjoyed that the Razor, who we should note is Andrew Wilson, yeah, which is a Wilson brother.
A third Wilson brother that I did not know existed. But, like, he honestly sounds exactly like Owen Wilson.
And that's what threw me when I watched it this time. I was like, that voice sounds so familiar, yeah, and I couldn't place him. And it was only when you came over afterwards and said, do you know that this is a Wilson and related to the other two? And I was like, that makes a lot of sense. But, like, the idea that your coach goes across the track and gives one of your plays to another team. Like,
yeah, because you haven't read the playbook. Because
you haven't read the playbook, yeah, and you don't think he's actually that smart and comes up with good plays. Like, I love it. Any other sports movie, that would not go over well with anybody. So, any last things you want to talk about? Any other final thoughts?
No, I don't know. Like, just that for 15 years, I've assumed I would enjoy this movie. And now that I've watched it, I was like, oh, yeah. Like,
okay.
It was like a very solid sort of maybe 6.5, 7 out of 10. But, like, on a Sunday afternoon or whatever I watch this, it's like, that is exactly what I'm looking for. Like, I don't necessarily want to be challenged all the time.
It was easy. It was an easy watch.
Yeah. For anyone who maybe can or cannot hear, like, I've also been sick. Yeah. And so, like, putting this movie on was just like, oh, this is real easy. Like, this is real easy entertainment that actually has a lot more going for it than sort of a lot of other things that we would deem easy, light entertainment.
Would you watch it again?
Probably.
Yeah.
Like, not soon. But, like, yeah, like, there's enough in there. I think because I enjoyed the characters enough, and it is kind of fun to see Kristen Wiig in this movie about, like, a lot of women a year or two before Bridesmaids comes out. And you're sort of like, oh, like, I wonder if she was writing Bridesmaids while she was on the script of this movie, or while she was on the set of this movie, and sort of seeing, like, the female camaraderie and, like, how can we maybe twist it just a little bit? You know what I mean? Which is then leads us to Bridesmaids, which, like, does that really, really well. There's just, like, a few things like that in this movie where you're like, there's enough going on.
Yeah.
You should be like, yeah, this is it's like a fun little time capsule.
Yeah, I think Drew Barrymore, as at the start we said, like, this was her debut and she's really only done one film. I think she might have two more now in the works.
She's coming back to do some more?
I think so. I think I looked it up and I think she's got two kind of like in production as director. So we'll see where those go.
She's done a lot of producing. I know that. Yes. Like, she owns her own production company. And, like, I think she probably produced this, to be fair. But I know she did, like, the Charlie's Angels movies and things like that. Like, she's made quite a bit of money as a producer. It's like she's just been making movies
since she was five.
For, like, 40 years. Like, yeah, she knows how to do this. And so that's kind of why I was a bit surprised that she hasn't gone back to do it again since 2009. But if she comes back, I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. I'll see what she's got. Like, if she's doing kind of another genre thing like this, where she's kind of taking a sports movie, a coming of age thing, and putting her own little spin on it, I'll be intrigued to check it out. I'm not going to write her off. It wouldn't be in my top five directorial debuts, but also my five all were like fours, 4.5s, fives. Yours was somehow a three.
Yours also spanned from 1920 to now, and mine really are from 1990, yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, not the 1920. Night of the Hunter is probably the earliest one. No, maybe it is Kane. Kane was like 41.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kane's probably the earliest one. Hunter's, I think, 50-something. Maybe I should have given you the challenge for Night of the Hunter. God, it's so good.
Teasing next week? I don't know if we have one for next week.
We have ideas. We haven't really discussed next week. We have some ideas, though. You'll find out when we find out.
Yeah. There'll be an episode next week.
There'll be a challenge next week is what we're getting at, though.
Yes. We'll see everybody then.
Until then.